walk across the courtyard towards the library.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales by the KPLA. Today on our show, we're happy to have an interview with Bob Holman, who was just at the Kodiak Public Library last weekend with his film, Language Matters. Last Saturday at the library, he also hosted a poetry workshop, thanks to a Ford Foundation travel grant. His visit to the library was a collaboration between Katie Baxter at the Kodiak Public Library and April Counselor with the Aleutic Museum. And KPLA was grateful to be able to sit down with him and do an interview for our Beyond the Cover segment. Later on our show, we'll have some book reviews for our community roar or rave over amazing reads segment. On Lively Live Chats, Peg and Ellie come in to give us some tips and updates on what's happening at the library in October. But before all of that, I want to talk to you about some things that the Kodiak Public Library Association are doing this month. This month is the beginning of the altered book season. So on the 24th of October, Jacqueline Madsen is offering an altered book workshop at the Kodiak Public Library. The fee for this workshop is $75. Jackie's a fantastic local artist who'll be providing inspiration, education, some materials, and tips, of course, on how to create your own altered books. If you're interested in that workshop, go down to the Kodiak Public Library and pre-register. So again, October 24th, that's a Saturday. It's a full-day workshop going from 10 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. The cost is $75, and if you want to register for it, just go on down to the Kodiak Public Library or call them at 907-486-8680. Space is limited, so make sure to register soon. The Kodiak Public Library Association is working with the Kodiak Arts Council and the Kodiak Public Library to put on the Altered Book Season, the Altered Book event this year. So this is looking forward to in February, where we're going to have our final Altered Book showing and viewing. Start thinking now about what kind of altered book you want to make so you have time to finish your project before the entries in January and the show in February. There is no charge to enter a altered book in this event. If you need some books to work on for your altered book projects, or if you want to find that special book to bring to Jackie's workshop and altar, you should come down to the Kodiak Island Brewery on October 25th. That's the day that the KPLA is having one of its brewery book sales. If you come on down, we've got our logo bags that we're selling for $7 for a small or $10 for a large, and if you buy one of the Kodiak Public Library Association bags, you can fill it with books. You can also bring down your own bags, and we'll be giving discounted prices for bags of books. So come down, pick up some reading for over the winter season, and also pick up some books to create an altered book project out of. We will also have some books available for free just to take for your altered book projects. So again, this event, the Kodiak Island Brewery book sale, is happening Sunday, October 25th. It's a busy weekend for the KPLA. October 24th is the Jacqueline Madsen Workshop. October 25th is the Kodiak Island Brewery Book Sale. If you want to keep updated on what the KPLA is doing, you can always check us out at www.kodiaklibrary.org or find us on Facebook, Kodiak Public Library Association. You might consider joining or renewing your membership with us. We have fun events happening and volunteer opportunities are always available with us, so check us out. Okay, so now that I've told you about what we're doing this month, let's get back to our show, our first segment, Beyond the Cover, and the interview with the poet Bob Holman.
Simplest of pleasures, the world at its base.
This is Brian Large, and welcome to Beyond the Cover, our segment in Dog-Eared Reads, where we'll talk with authors, musicians, and other performers coming to Kodiak. On today's segment, we'll talk to Bob Holman. The Kodiak Public Library and the Aleutic Museum worked with the Ford Foundation travel grant to bring us the leader of the spoken word, hip-hop, and slam poetry movement. Host of MTV's Spoken Word, he appeared on Def Jam Poets and created Mouth, Almighty Mercury record label, the first major spoken word record label. Bob Holman is founder of Bowery Poetry Club in downtown New York, slam master at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe, and teaches at Columbia and New York University. Bob Holman, welcome to the show.
Brian.
We are here in Kodiak, Alaska.
On the island.
So tell me, how did you think of Kodiak, Alaska? I need to get there.
Well, it was April. You'll have to help me, counselor. Because my friend Mary Lynn is a linguist who works at the Smithsonian. She's actually the first person to be hired by the Smithsonian to work with endangered languages. You keep looking for these little signs that this idea that languages are valuable, like gold, or like endangered species of plants and animals. I mean, people have enough belief in their value that we've got laws to protect endangered species of plants and animals. But endangered languages, and as will be seen in the film I show, Language Matters, half of the languages on the planet are going to disappear this century unless we get to work now and start respecting one another's mother tongues the way we respect each other's cultures. Hey, language goes along with culture. As a matter of fact, sometimes I think that language is culture. So the Smithsonian has hired Mary Lynn, and when Language Matters came out on PBS in January of 15, we had an event at the Smithsonian that Mary Lynn helped us set up. Then I got the Ford Foundation money to come to Alaska, and so I went to Mary to say, hey, who should I hook up with there? And she says, well, be sure you get a hold of April Counselor there in Kodiak. And Kodiak just blossomed, you know, with Katie Baxter and everything. The library just took it on as like a personal mission. I think here people get it. You know, I think in Alaska in general, there is a substrata of people who get it, you know, because there's a belief in the original people, the indigenous voices of Alaska, that you don't find anywhere else on the continent. The other places are trying, and of course, there's great language revitalization efforts going on in a lot of places, but only in Alaska was there a bill passed by the legislature to make the indigenous languages all the official languages of Alaska. You guys have 20 official languages. Let's wake up.
We can, and I do hear people saying Chamai.
Chamai.
A lot more. Yes. Yeah, yeah. That's it. And it starts right there.
Yeah, exactly. It just starts with hello, and then it's going to grow from there. And what you eventually want to have is the choice of whether you're going to learn in an English medium school or in an Aleutic medium school. You want to have the choice for your child, if the parents don't speak language, that you can go to a language nest where for X hours a day, the parent or caretaker will be able to be in an environment where only Aleutic will be spoken and where the baby will hear only Aleutic. And that's a way to begin to balance out the incredible noisiness of the bully language of English, which everybody's going to learn. It's not a question of my kid isn't going to learn the language if we speak our language at home. No. You see, that's holdover from the days when people were forced to stop speaking the language, which is one of the saddest parts of the genocide against the native peoples, was can't speak your language because it doesn't make any sense. We don't understand it. It's not written down. All these arguments that now we know were just so wrong-headed. And now, of course, it's embarrassing to have to go to the elders and say, now would you mind teaching your language? But luckily, many of the elders, you know, have the patience to say, okay, yeah, all right. Or, you know, to get back into it. Or second language learners.
So can you tell us more about how we can show respect to the elders that still speak the language?
What's most crucial is that people whose identity are in that language have the opportunity to grow up in that language as much as possible. And the first thing to acknowledge, you know, like I mentioned before, is that being bilingual is not an unusual thing. You know, 75% of the world is bilingual. 50% of the world speak three languages or more. It's only in the big bully, I call them, countries where being monolingual is considered the natural state of affairs. And because that's the way capitalism works best. Capitalism works best when everybody thinks the same way, speaks the same language, and wants the same shaped potato chip. You know, I keep saying, you know, it's not natural for humans to be Pringleized. And when we start having that kind of individualism come back, and that's, you know, I mean, Kodiak is filled with that kind of individualism. Alaska is filled with it. And if we get to the point where we start to, you know, approach the land and our way of living, you know, that understands the way people lived then and how they worked in harmony with the planet and with each other, then we can take advantage of a marvelous ability to read and write. And now third consciousness, our digital consciousness. You know, we're moving into a whole new state of consciousness now. So maybe we can remember that these three consciousnesses, the orality, before there were books, before there was writing, and then the book comes along, and now we're moving into, I don't know even what they're going to call it, digital. But each of them are important steps in human consciousness, but none of them are like a progress one to the other. They're all peers, and we need to take from each of them. We can keep what we need from book learning and science and the repetition of experiments, but also don't forget the kind of community we had before there was writing, when the book was a person and you went to that person to learn. You know, we've forgotten that, and colonialism didn't have any value for that kind of orality, for that kind of culture. We wiped it out, or tried to, but it survived. Now it's our chance to help it to survive, to respect it and give back.
So do you think it's too late, or do we have a chance for redemption?
Gosh, I don't know. You tell me. You know, I hope so. You know, there's a lot of people who believe that it can, but even some of the people who are working the hardest for this, like Tim Argetzinger up in Kotzebue, on his wall is the plaque with a pen that the governor used a year ago, October of 2014, to sign the law to make 20 Alaskan languages official languages. And Tim says to me, what good is it to be official if your language is dying? And he's talking about Inupiaq. And we had the most marvelous workshop, a bilingual Inupiaq English workshop with elders. Inupiaq elders were there to look at the poems of Joan Kane, this marvelous Alaskan writer who writes in both English and Inupiaq. And they were looking at these poems. I'm not kidding you. They were saying, oh, she writes in King Island dialect. Now, King Island is now an empty island. You know, the people were forced to leave there, and that the people who lived there are no more. They've been scattered about, and Joan herself lives in Anchorage. But these marvelous Inupiaq speakers in Kotzebue were saying, oh, look how they write, how they talked in King Island. I remember that. Well, we had 23 people at this workshop, which is a great turnout. Half of them were like college-age students who were from a creative writing class that was required to come. Now, you can think, now, what would it be like if you're in college and you're required to come to a writing workshop, and all of a sudden you're hearing the details about this indigenous language that you know nothing of? Although some of them actually did know something. Some of them had names. We went around the room and said, Ivanyu Kiten, I am, and then your name in Inupiaq. Half of them actually did have names. I didn't at the time. I just had to say Bob, and everybody laughed at me. Later on at the immersion school, I was given the name Ukuk, which means tongue or talks a lot. You know, everybody was brought into these language and these, are they detailed questions? No more than the gossip that would happen when we started to talk about Barack Obama visiting Kotzebue. You know, there's also plenty of stories there. It's all about the stories, Brian. Well, I'm a poet, so I believe in language. And when you say that a language is dying, that kills me. You know, I mean, language doesn't want to die. I mean, it is natural for a language to be born and change and then die, but it's not natural for half the languages on the planet to disappear in the next 50 or 60 years. That's unnatural. We know that because linguists can actually see in a language when it was created, when it met other languages. You know, you can use language to date events in a people's history that's as accurate as carbon dating. Changes occur in linguistic, in the way people talk, in a regular form. And these scientists have figured that out. Now, I'm not a scientist. I'm a poet. So I don't know that kind of information. But I got love for language, you know, so that's what kicks me into gear and wanting me to help out with this. And I think that it's something that every person can pick up. Even when I've been hearing Kodiak, people have talked about the different languages that are here. And it's Aleutic, of course, is first language. But, you know, Tagalog is spoken here. You were telling me about how you spoke Tagalog on the basketball court. What better way to learn a language than by playing ball with it? You know, that's just great.
So what do you think makes you an authority on language revitalization?
There's nothing that makes me an authority. I don't position myself as an expert, but what I am is a host or a guide who believes in this to my inner core in the same way that back in the day when I was the original slam master, poetry slam master at the New Eurekan, New York plus Puerto Rican, the New Eurekan Poets Cafe, I was a believer in a spoken word, which I still am, which happens to be the kind of poetry that I write and perform, where the musicality of the language and the way it sounds is part of the meaning. You know, what happened during the era of literacy was that the book became primary and people wrote for books and for the poem to exist in books. And there was styles of poetry that got to be, in my mind, more and more arcane and difficult. And I enjoyed them and I write books, no problem. But it takes you away from poetry being part of your daily life. Hip-hop was one move into making a kind of American poetry that works really well in through orality. As a matter of fact, it works so well that hip-hop is now an international phenomenon and bigger than poetry, even though it isn't anything but a form of poetry. I can't explain that. But, you know, and the Poetry Slam itself, this mock competition, I'm sure they've been here in Kodiak. I know it took part in the Wush Kanadi slam down in Juneau, and there's a slam in Anchorage in a couple of days. We had a high school slam when I was in Fairbanks. Alan Hayton there has just been hired by the Doyon Foundation to be their language coordinator. And there are these signs, you know, Alan and Tim and other people around the state, Lance Twitchell in Tlingit in Juneau. These are language warriors, as Larry Kimura of Hawaii calls it. In the film, you see that Hawaii had 400 speakers of Hawaiian in 1960, and they're up to 30,000 now. Now, that's not a big number when you consider a whole language population, but it's better than from 400 to 3 or 4, like we find in some languages in Alaska happening now.
So what makes your film different from other language revitalization films?
Well, you know, Language Matters is a general overview of language revitalization. You know, what does it mean to lose a language, and what can be done to keep that from happening? You know, most of the language films that you see are made about a specific language. I saw a film in Homer that was about a language from that region. And there's a Cherokee film that was being shown after Language Matters was shown in Juneau. And there's a Lakota film, and there's a marvelous film about the Wampanoag language called We Still Live Here that I highly recommend. I think it's a beautiful and essential film about how Jessie Little Doe Baird began to dream in a language other than her own. She figured it had to be Wampanoag since that was her lineage. She went to MIT. The Wampanoag people live on Cape Cod. And there with the linguist Ken Hale, they began to find out about the Wampanoag language, which hadn't been spoken in 125 years. But they discovered it was the most written language of any Indian language in New England. There was a Bible. There were a lot of contracts. There were letters that the Wampanoag people had written to Washington to say, please don't take our land. You know, and they wrote that in their own language as well as having it translated so they could see that. And there were a couple of languages from their family, the Wampanoag language family, so that they could sort of knew what it sounded like. So they basically reconstructed this language, which now in Mashpee, Massachusetts, there's a school for Wampanoag with 5 classrooms. And Jesse's daughter, who's 12 years old, is fluent in Wampanoag, a language that hadn't been spoken in 125 years. Now, this is why when I talk with language people about an endangered language, they don't want me to say that, nor do they want me to say that something like Iyak is extinct. Nobody's speaking it now. They say Iyak is simply sleeping and that it will awake when the Yak people are ready to bring it back. And the linguists have recorded a lot, so they'll be able to do that. Now, you can say that's utopian, pie in the sky. And maybe it is, but maybe it isn't, is what I'm saying. And it takes a huge shift in consciousness to give back to these people the very basis of their existence, which is their language, their identity. But remember that kids can pick up any language you want to throw at them. If you hear anything in what I say today, it's that they're going to learn English. So if they learn other languages along the way, it's been proven by the time you get to junior high school, if you're bilingual, your IQ is 10 points higher than if you're monolingual. What's that about? That's about your brain working in these different ways. And so it's a good thing to have other languages. It's a good thing to know the planet through different language lenses.
So if you can go back in time again and take any poet from any time and put them into a rap battle,
yeah,
what poets would you pick?
That's a good one. Let's see. Nobody's ever asked me that question. By and large, it's Brian Large.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I love my man Homer. You know, so let's put Homer into it, because, you know, Homer, everybody says, oh, man, that's the guy that wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey. Yes and no. I mean, the point is Homer was an oral poet. He spoke it. I spoke it, but I wrote it, but I'm going nuts with these buts. Homer only spoke, and so somebody else had to write it down, and we don't know who wrote it down. So Homer would be great in an oral battle because he knows how to make the cipher. He knows both how to keep a form going and be able to interpolate the moment. In other words, improvise. Homer is the old Greek word for the master carpenter. The joiner. The carpenters carved out 1/4 each of a wheel, and then there was the joiner, or the homer, who do the carving to bring those 4 parts of the cyclos, cycle, wheel, together. In the same way that Homer, the poet, brought together all the stories of the people around him and sang them as one epic poem, as the Iliad or the Odyssey. So he was the maker, the joiner. Poesis, the word that poetry comes from, means to make, just to make something. So in a way, whenever you're making something, you're making a poem, you're creating something, and creating something out of nothing, out of language, out of words. That's what a poet does. Now, there are people who say that Homer wasn't a person. We don't know. That Homer was actually the name of the job of not just the master carpenter who joined together the 4 parts of the cyclos cycle, but the name of the job of the person who put together the Homeric cycle, the collection of stories that became the Iliad and the Odyssey. And there are people who say that there were 400 of these poets who were traveling around Greece and who were singing for their supper every night. It's kind of what I'm doing here in Kodiak. So I would go with Mr. Homer. Now, who else would I take? I don't know. Would I take Walt Whitman or Emily Dickinson, who are the mama and papa of United States poetry? Would I take my griot, G-R-I-O-T, my African poet who taught me about orality in Africa, Papa Suso, and have him go up against Homer? Or would you just want to go with Shakespeare? The thing about Shakespeare was, how did he write so much in so little time? And of course, he was writing at a time when he spelled his own name 5 different ways. There was no dictionary around to tell you how to spell a word, but you were writing, so you were able to use writing. It reminds me of text right now, texting, because people don't spell words in any way other than the way they want to spell them, the quickest possible way. I've got this question for you, Brian. You know, is texting writing or is it talking? Because people are texting each other instead of making phone calls. They're certainly not paying attention to the conventions of writing, like spelling and punctuation. Punctuation is now emoticons. What used to be a semicolon is now a wink. You know, I mean, things are really changing out there in the grammar field. So what do you think? Is texting talking or is it writing? I got a rock and roll mythology. I got a total apocalypse pathology. I got the most opposed hysterical of poetry. If it ain't coming at you, it's breezed on by. I got the heavy duty political intent. I got the worm farm, free form diamond noodle content. I got breezy ways and bop and raisin. When the word explodes, the mother load is where I'm at. Anyway, that gets us a long way from who would be in my epic rap battle. Let's make it be Homer versus Emily Dickinson. How's that?
That's good. So who would win in that battle?
I think that Emily Dickinson would win. Because, you know, Emily only published 7 poems in her lifetime. She wrote over 1,000. She wrote in a language that was English, but all her own. The first time her poems were published, the guys took out her dashes and punctuated them correctly. They didn't realize that the dash, as a punctuation, is that which moves along, like when you dash. And that's what she did. She kept breathing through her lines, you know. I'm nobody, she said. Who are you? Aren't you glad that you can be nobody too? How sad to be somebody, to be as boring as a log and have people applaud you in the bog.
How did you become a professional poet?
You know, what can I say? I guess professional means you get paid for it, and I don't mind picking up a paycheck like everybody else. But being an amateur, you know, amateur comes from the Latin word that means to love something. Amo, amas, amat, I love you. Amiable, you know, lovable. Amateur means you do something because you love it. And to be a poet, you can never stop doing what you do because you love it, if you're lucky enough to get paid to do it. Now, do I get paid for writing a poem? No. I mean, I write poetry, you know, every day or almost every day. It's a discipline for me. I got to keep at it. To be a poet and to be a, quote, professional one, I've had to invent what it is to be a poet. And that's been, you know, a lot of poets make their living as teachers. I teach now at Columbia and NYU, Columbia, where I went to school. So I'm actually, I've become the guy I used to laugh at. And that's, I think that's a stage in life as well. I haven't taught in over a year now because of this film and taking the film on the road. So there's another thing, you know, is making a film being a poet or being in the film, talking about language. I started Mouth Almighty Records. I was the slam master at the New Eureka, and I founded the Bowery Poetry Club. I want to invite everybody to drop by and see me when you're in New York at 308 Bowery, now open only Sundays and Mondays. So please come by on Sundays and Mondays and say hello. You know, so Defining yourself as a poet is the most important step to make, Brian. You got to just say, that's what I do now. And I don't know, and professional and how you make your living at it is like being a poet. You're the one who defines it. And as to whether or not you're making a living at it, it's what you define making a living as a poet. There are no poets in the U.S. who make their living by writing poems and getting paid by writing a poem. All of us have to figure out what that means. So the important thing about being a poet is that the only person who can make that decision is you.
Thank you, Bob. It's been a pleasure having you here, Kodiak.
Brian, it's a beautiful place, Kodiak. Thanks for having me.
If there's anything else you want to add on to?
Read a poem.
Yes.
You know, I'll read a poem to end things here. Here, sing this one back to me. Honeybee, honeybee, deep in the honey tree, do not tell me to suck dry the tips of whipped grass. Swan sway, Ganges flows all day. Would you send me off then to the blasting seas? Tail singer, nightingale crooner, carousing on the leaf drip. Who dares say, excuse me, quiet please, eat dry leaf clippings? This robin rockin' tail, lit by the fullest moon, try to redirect a fog-bound swirl. See what happens to you. My feet on the lotus? No, my feet are the lotus. All God? Gosh, I was looking over at you. Shh. No need this talking. This poem, so obvious. Shh. Okay. Sing this one back to me.
Thank you so much, Bob Holman and Brian, for that great interview. And thanks to the Aleutic Museum, too, for helping to bring Bob Holman to town, along with the Kodiak Public Library, of course. Big shout out to both of them. We really appreciate you bringing artists of this caliber to Kodiak. So now let's move on to the Community Roar segment of the show. We want to hear what you Kodiak people are reading. And if you're interested in doing a review for us, you're always welcome to call me, Athenia, at 907-539-7660, or you can email us at kpla.alaska@gmail.com to arrange a time to record an interview or to just send us one that you've already recorded yourself. So without further ado, let's get to Community Roar, Rave Over Amazing Reads on Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales by the KPLA.
I am saying my book review is about Adrift by Stephen Callahan, published in 1986. The concept of the story is that he starts his journey across the sea in his boat, Napoleon Solo. His boat sunk around his birthday, but he had a little raft that he spent the next 76 days on surviving and thriving for food. He finds out ways to make his own water sources that people didn't really do, and he uses what he has to make things he needs. He uses three pencils to make a way to measure his point on a map, finding fish and going a little insane. My favorite part was this part that I'm going to read out of the book. At least 30 fish gather for their nightly escort. They beat at the raft like a lynching mob of buzzing and with hatred. Slight murmuring reach my ears. You will pay for your murder, human, alone, time and again. I load my spear, Yurk, the powerful Xyz, and blindly fire into the mist below. The raft, many are stung, but the points of my arms are tired. The spot on my chest where I rest the butt of the gum while loading is sore. Still, one fish can't be driven off mechanically. I eat a slab of her mate, and I watch her wheel around in clear water to strike me again and again. The flesh is not as delicious as I expected. She continues to beat at me into the night. Morning brings a change in flavor. The meat is superb. This is a true story. And probably an adult's book. They should read it because it's a very good concept. He's living alone, just has to survive on what he has in this little raft. Has a water source that breaks, so he found out a way to make it so it works. There was another book that he did go with other people. He made it with other people. It was called Capsize. I described that book to other people as well. It's kind of the same, but three people, not him, in it. But they all get capsized, and they beat his record of 76 days lost at sea. They do longer, 3 months, maybe a little longer. It was three people in cold water. He did this in warm water. I am Fade, and I am 10 years old. I really like this book, Adrift, by Stephen Callahan, made in 1986.
It's not like you're not trying, with a pencil in your hair, to defy the beauty the good Lord put in there.
Hi there, welcome to Katie and Nia's Book Talk. This is our first program, and today we're going to be reviewing the book Looking for Alaska by John Green.
Yeah, I really like this book. I think this was one of his first ones that he wrote, and despite being young when he wrote it, it has fantastic writing, and it's definitely my favorite.
The story begins with this boy named Miles.
Miles lives at home with his parents, and there's nothing spectacular about his life. He's pretty average.
But then he goes off to college.
College?
Yeah, he goes off to college.
I thought it was boarding school.
He goes off to college or boarding school.
Let's just call it school.
He goes off to school and he meets all these fantastic different people.
Yeah, these characters, they're so different from each other, but they're also the same. It's very hard to explain. I think you're going to have to read the book to figure that one out.
And in this group is this girl named Alaska. Alaska is a pretty weird name for a girl, and I thought this book was about this guy going to Alaska, but no, it's about a girl named Alaska.
You know, Nia, it's also a weird name for a boy.
It's a weird name for anyone.
Okay.
The story behind her name is her parents let her pick her name when she was really little, and she was in love with the name Chad, but was then informed that that was the boy's name, so she chose Alaska.
No gender stereotyping here.
So he goes and meets all these fantastic people, including Alaska, and he meets Alaska, and he is instantly fascinated by her. She is so mysterious. She loves reading books, and she is in love with this one quote, "How will I ever get out of this labyrinth?" And she kind of takes it as a metaphor for life. Like, she wants to escape everything and just go read a book. She's very much a bookworm.
I can definitely relate to that.
The quote Pudge really likes is, "I go to seek a great perhaps." He is obsessed with this great perhaps. He wants to go find this great perhaps, and no one really knows what the great perhaps is.
A lot of this book is metaphorical, just like the quote that Alaska liked. And in the end, these two quotes really tie up everything, and they give you closure and like an idea of why they were there. You don't know why they were there at first, but when you're done reading, you're like, oh.
It all seems like a bunch of random stuff. A group of friends who all meet each other, and they all like each other, for the most part. And they go on all these adventures, and you're like, this is really fun. But is there really any climax? Is there any point?
It's like those coming-of-age teen comedies.
There's closure at the very end. It doesn't seem like it, but when you go back and look at the book, there's something that happens in the book that changes Pudge's life and changes the Colonel's life. And it's really drastic, and no one ever saw it coming.
But then the quotes kind of, they really give you closure.
Yeah, and the way the book's set up is, like, they don't have chapters. They have a certain amount of days or weeks before.
Before this thing happens.
And then after it happens, they say after. And it's like, I remember when I first started reading, I'm like, before what? And I knew something was coming, and I wanted to go to that spot and read ahead, but I made sure I didn't do it.
As we said, there are some sections that are not exactly child appropriate. So make sure you guys talk to your parents and talk about this with them, because I don't know if your parents would want you reading this, but you really just have to look past that, because there are some really good parts that talk about love as being able to talk with the other person.
And not just physical. And that really is important to the story.
Yeah. It talks about all these different things, like love and the great perhaps and the labyrinth and all these things that everyone has a different opinion of. And it just gives you a really new outlook on those things.
Yeah, I feel like John Green like had all these ideas, all these great epiphanies.
All these things he wanted to discuss with other people, and he just put them in a book.
So, like, the nation can know, and I just love that. That's a great way to get out your opinion.
Anyways, this is a really, really well-written book. It's full of really good descriptions, and the characters are just so easy to relate to. And all their adventures just keep you on your toes. You never know what's coming next. And so we think you should get out there and get that book. There are some copies at the library, I believe.
Borrow from a friend. Take it. Don't just take it. Check it out.
Steal it from a friend.
Steal it from a friend. Buy it. Listen to it. I just really think that you should get these ideas in your head, because they changed the way I look at things a lot.
Yeah, so get out there, get that book, and keep on reading. Looking for Alaska by John Green.
So I watch you through the bouquet, imagining a scene. Spending time in the sleep.
Hello, my name is Bob Ross, and it is my pleasure to present to you the second in a series of book reviews from the Alaska Room of the Kodiak Public Library. Today's selection is titled McCord of Alaska, Statesman for the Last Frontier, a 210-page 1975 publication by John Sherman Long with Grace Doring McCord, and published by Dylan Lederbach Incorporated of Cleveland, Ohio. My primary historical reading and research interest is Kodiak during the World War II time period. Jack McCord, then in his late 50s, supplied more than 200,000 pounds of beef from his herds on Sitkalitik and Chirkoff Islands to the U.S. military in this time period. He was perhaps the only Kodiak businessman to be given a personal naval escort through the Chiniak Bay minefield for the express purpose of meeting his beef contract obligations. He was also instrumental in helping augment the local fresh meat demand in Kodiak. This book held my attention for this narrow focus of interest, and I highly recommend its reading on just these merits alone. Yet this is a fascinating read beyond my narrow focus of interest. The young McCord that nearly drowned debarking from the steamship Yucatan in 1906 at Talkeetna fast became a seasoned sourdough. Jack McCord led an adventurous, even extraordinary life. He had been schoolteacher, supply supervisor, ship's crew, guide, miner, miner's advocate and judge, founder of the town of Livingood, president of a lumber company. He made a fortune in gold. He explored and mined above the Arctic Circle. He held oil claims between Katmai and Cold Bay. He legally represented all oil claimants in Juneau and Washington. He met two successive presidents. He knew Billy Mitchell. His character was used in a Rex Beach novel, The Iron Trail. He partnered with the real Dan McGrew of Robert Service fame and attended the 1913 Pan Pacific Convention in San Francisco, all before coming to Kodiak. Events in his life following Kodiak were equally amazing, but you'll have to read to find out what happened then. I hope you have enjoyed this book review of McCord of Alaska, Statesman for the Last Frontier, by John Sherman Long with Grace Doring McCord, a selection from the Alaska Room Collection, available
at your Kodiak Public Library. My name is Bob Ross, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
And what then would I say to you, lying there in bed? These words were the kiss I would plant in your head.
Hi, everyone. This is Astrid Mueller. I'm web designer and brand designer, and I'm very passionate about helping women entrepreneurs succeed. And I've got a book review for you guys today that is called Start, and it's by John Acuff. And I picked this book because it's all about what I am about, to help inspire others to succeed and to find your passion and your dream. And this book has many inspirations in that direction. A quote by him is, "A way to punch fear in the face, escape average, and do work that matters." So he has tons of inspirations in the book that revolve around how to fight those fears that we all have, how to even recognize them. There's all these voices that people often have, and I've caught myself, you know, to have that too, that we're all scared of something. But Acuff inspires people to really recognize those fears, and he has a ton of tips on how to punch them in the face, as he says it, and to just move forward and just do it. And one of the things he says too is, like, we had like a set line in our careers, you know, at a certain age, you were expected to be this or that in your career. And nowadays, he says, things are getting much more jumbled up. You don't have the full job security anymore. So it can happen that, you know, you're 50 and you lose your job, or it can happen that you're 19 and you found a startup, so you become millionaire. Things can be totally jumbled up. And it's basically up to us, as he says, as inspiration to start whenever, start now, and no matter how old we are, just go for it and do it. He talks about being awesome and finding your awesome. And I'm going to quote him here, which I really like this quote. He says, "Being awesome is about finding the core of who you are and what lights you up. Once you've discovered that, you can have a million different jobs." And I like how he says that. This whole, you know, just finding what really connects with you and what makes you happy and follow that. And he had another really good inspiration in the book that I loved, which revolves around finding your passion. And finding your passion is this big myth sometimes, and it can be kind of intimidating. Like, what if you don't know your passion? And I've heard that a lot with students I talk to, or young startups, or even myself. Like, it took me a long time to figure out, like, what really excites me. You just kind of like do stuff and figure it out along the way. But Acuff has a really cool inspiration in the book, and he just says, you know, forget the whole quest for the passion, just follow what interests you. And I love that. Not obsess about it, but just kind of like go with the flow and just pick something that interests you and go with it and start. That's his great inspiration, one of the many inspirations in there. There's another cool quote that I wanted to share with you guys. He's quoting Stephen Pressfield, and he says, "Creative work is not a selfish act or a bid for attention on the part of the actor. It's a gift to the world and every being in it. Don't cheat us of your contribution. Give us what you've got." End of quote. I love this quote in the book. It shows that we all have been given a gift and that we should pursue it. It's not just for ourselves, but for the world. All of us, we're unique, and we have some unique things to give to the world. And I love the inspiration that we're actually just jumping forward and really doing it. And so that's one of the quotes that I really loved in the book. So to sum it up, the book is super cool for business owners, for people who have big dreams and may not dare to follow them just yet and have like nagging voices and doubts inside of you. It's good for people who may just even think about starting a hobby or something. You want to do something, but something is holding you back. Take this book and have a look and find inspirations on how you can overcome your own fears and how you can punch them in the face and just go for your dream and make it happen. No matter what obligations you have in your life. There's always creative options of changing the path you're on. If you're not happy, your people around you will not be happy. Like, people who really love you, they want you to be happy. Oh my gosh, I'm starting to preach now. But I just really found this book fantastic. And I think anybody who has like a glimmer of a dream in their hearts and you're not fully happy, you should grab that book and grab some inspiration out of it. So again, the book's called Start, Get From Average to Awesome. And it's by John Acuff. I wish you all fun reading it. I hope you like it too.
Karen of the Carpenters, singing in the rain, another lovely victim of the mirror's evil way.
Well, hello, my name is Lexa Meyer, and the book I'm reviewing is The Harder They Come by T.C. Boyle. Publishing date was March of 2015. I got it through the Overdrive app, and it's part of the Listen Alaska system. So it's an audiobook. I listened to it while working on a fused glass project. So just like most of T.C. Boyle's writing, it, you know, the themes, I don't want to give away the plot because I think you should read it and everybody will really enjoy it if they do read it. He deals a lot with the destruction of the environment. He deals a lot with dark comedy situations, often tragedies that are somehow slightly funny and ironic, but maybe not to the characters involved, but definitely to the reader. Most of his characters are kind of anti-heroes. They're people that don't mean to be heroes, but are unwittingly and through rather unusual circumstances. And this particular book dealt with some topics I think that people in Kodiak are thinking a lot about right now, including dealing with law enforcement. And some of the characters deal with law enforcement not only in the United States, but also in a foreign country. And there's some interesting similarities and differences from the experiences, positives and negatives. And I think people in Kodiak, that's a hot topic right now, kind of draw some parallels to what's happening in the book as to what happens in real life.
So do you think that's an intentional theme of the book, morality?
Not so much moral issues. It's more with the rights of the people versus the rights of law enforcement. And how far can each party go in one way or the other? It seems like the police go a little further than necessary in a lot of cases, and this is highlighted in the book. It's a rather interesting read. Also, there's some people that just feel like they don't have to obey the law. It's not written for them, and they have some valid justifications as to why, and some people do because they really feel that, you know, we've warped and made so many, you know, changes to the Declaration of Independence. It no longer is really a valued document. That's what one of the characters thinks. And then there's another who's just playing crazy. There's a young man in the story who suffers from severe mental illness, and he's just playing crazy. And so he kind of takes on the extreme there. So it's very interesting. Gun rights are also a focus of this book. And what I like about T.C. Boyle's writing, it's neither pro nor con. He just brings up topics, lets the characters explore them to their end in the book, and lets the reader decide. But he never really resolves anything, which I like. You have to draw your own conclusions. He never comes out and says as an author, or his characters never come out and say what's right and what's wrong. It's just, this is what happened. How do you feel as a reader after the situation is said and done? And I like that. Open to a lot of interpretation. As far as reader level, I'd say it's definitely rated R. You know, as far as like if you compare it to the movie rating system, I think it's up to a parent's judgment if they'd like to let their child read it. So I'd say it's more towards adult to very much older, younger adult, you know, 17, 18, 19. There's violence and sex and all the stuff that you might not want to expose your children to, but it makes for a great adult read, in my opinion. And D.C. Boyle, you may have read some of his other books. He actually came to Kodiak several years ago. Margaret Holm at the Kodiak Library brought him here as at the Kodiak College Library brought him here for a, you know, visiting authors conference. He did a reading and stuff. And he's written other books like Drop City, which is about a commune full of hippies in the 1960s, 70s that decided to take off for Alaska. And then there's The Tortilla Curtain, which kind of the main focus there is immigration and how illegal aliens, especially from Mexico and Latin America, are treated in this country. And then he has numerous short story collections, which are really nice. I like listening to short stories when I do projects because I can go to work for an hour or two as I have time, and it's about the same time as the story.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely true that when you're listening to a an audio book, you can keep your hands busy to multitasking.
You can. The other thing about an audio book that I like and dislike is that I really feel like the narrator of the audiobook can make or break the book, as it were. I do know that the author himself, T.C. Boyle, narrates a lot of his short story collections, and those are available on the Listen Alaska app. And I love it when he narrates. You can really tell that he knows the story, he knows the characters, and he is expressive and he acts out the characters in the story, which I really enjoy. Yeah, one thing I would say is the Overdrive app and the Listen Alaska website is great, except it can be a little complicated. I consider myself pretty internet and computer savvy, and it was a little tricky at first. So if people have trouble with the program, you can actually go right to the library, bring your iPhone, bring your iPad, hook up to the wireless, and have a librarian help you get on. They're extremely helpful. Or you can even call, and people will help you navigate that over the phone.
I know, too, if you've lost your PIN and you don't know how to access it, same thing. Just come on in with your library card, talk to one of the library assistants, and they'll get you on that Overdrive account.
Yes, yes. And on a similar note, please, they've been asking for people to suggest books, not only for the shelf collection, but also for the Listen Alaska collection. So if there's titles you'd like to see or like to listen to, definitely let them know. And you can actually do that right through Listen Alaska. You can suggest titles.
That's very true, Alexa. And actually, that is the perfect tie-in for our next segment of the show, Lively Live Chats. So thank you, Alexa Meyer. And we're going to head right into speaking with Peg and Ellie.
Hi, my name is Peg. Welcome to Lively Live Chat. I'm here today to talk to you not about an event that's going on at the library, but rather a tool that we have in the library that is designed to help people find what they're looking for. So most people already know that you can search the library catalog either online on the library's website, or you can search it on the iPads throughout the library. And there's also a laptop that's set up specifically for searching the library collection. And that's located just right past the front desk. What I want to highlight is the power search function. Basically, the power search is a way to give users a little bit more control in how they search. I know a lot of us, you know, we do a Google search and we just use a quick little keyword and our search results are pages upon pages of results, not always exactly what we're looking for. So what the power search does is it gives you, as I said, more control over what kind of results you'll see. Now, you'll see when you go to the catalog that there's a link that says Power Search right underneath the search bar for words and phrases. And when you click on that, you'll see that it gives you a lot more variety as far as how to search. Not only can you search by a word or a phrase, but you can also search by author, by specific title, by subject, and even by type, like if you're looking for certain CDs or DVDs. So let's say you just finished reading the latest James Patterson novel and you want to know what else the library has that's by that author. That's the perfect opportunity to use Power Search. You go into author name, you put in James Patterson, and it'll show you all of the books that the library has in their collection by that author. Now, let's say you're only interested in the new releases. You don't want to know about his old books. You can still do a Power Search with that author's name and put in the publication year of 2015. And it will show you everything we have by him that's a new book, new releases. The same thing goes with CDs and DVDs. Let's say you wanted to know whether we carry any Frank Sinatra CDs. Power search. You put in Frank Sinatra, you put the format as CD, and it'll show you everything we have by him. It gives you so much more control over how you search. It's a little bit faster and more efficient, and all the staff at the library are available to help anyone use the Power Search who's interested. And as an added little incentive, we'll be doing a fun raffle giveaway for anyone who comes into the library and does a Power Search. You can submit your name, and we'll do a drawing sometime in October for a fun little Halloween-themed treat. So come on down to the library and check out our Power Search. I look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, my name is Ellie, and I'm here to talk about some happenings at the library for the month of October. All through October, we'll be having our three story times. Lapsit will be on Wednesdays from 10:30 to 10:50. On Thursdays at 11 to 11:30, Discover Story Time for 4 to 5-year-olds. And on Fridays, Toddler Story Times for 3-year-olds at 10:30 to 10:50. Also happening for the month of October, on Saturday, October 17th, we'll be having a Halloween decoration workshop. This workshop is open to all children and it'll be fun paper crafts from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock. On October 24th, we'll have a children's Halloween fill, Hotel Transylvania. This is the first version of Hotel Transylvania. This will happen at 1 to 2:30 p.m. And Halloween Day, October 31st, will be Halloween Story Time from 11 to 12. Stories about Halloweens and hands-on activity. Thank you for tuning into Lively Live Chats, and see you at the library.
Thanks, Ellie. Thanks, Peg. Thanks, everyone who was on the show today. And one final little note. All the music today that you heard on the show was the song Librarian by My Morning Jacket. And with that, I'll say goodbye. This is Athenia, and you've been listening to Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales by the KPLA.